Do we have a quorum?
No, we don't, but I'm looking to see whether there might be people in the chat and the on the participants who
aren't in the meeting. I don't see any.
Nobody's there yet, I guess. Paul's here. We're here.
Yeah, Dave is likely in transit.
Yeah, Dave will be a little bit late.
Right.
There's Peter. Peter just arrived.
Okay.
Well, that's five. We're five the quorum, right?
Yes.
Huh?
Yes.
We're okay. And let's see. Oh, Lisa's in the attendees. Can you move her into the onto the grown-up table, please?
Got it.
And then Chris is here. That's great. So we're missing Peter Liddell and Katie, and Dave will come later. All good? All right. So I think given that, why don't we start things? And we can call the roll now. Bill, I guess you want to do that, don't you?
Oh, sure. I'm just going to read it off of the off of the agenda. President Nagel?
Here.
Director Padian?
Here.
Lisa Corona?
Here.
Katie Gluck? Not here. Peter Guerrero?
Here.
Peter Liddell? No. Danielle Madugo?
Here.
Paul Moss?
Here.
And David Spate. No.
Okay. We have a public comment now, and I see that our good colleague Chris Hilliard is with us. Chris, you don't have your hand up, but if you had any comments or questions, now's the time. I mean, that stuff is not on the agenda.
Chris, I added you as a, oh, there you are.
Yeah, I don't have anything in particular. We're doing the water, emergency water storage distribution tomorrow. So I've been busy with that the last couple of days.
Great, thank you. Okay. Seeing no other members of the public, we'll ask to adopt the consent items, which include the minutes. I can take a motion on that.
A motion to approve the minutes.
Second.
Okay, any discussion? Then I guess we can call roll.
Okay, President Nagel?
Here, yes.
Chairman Padian?
Yes.
Lisa Corona?
Yes.
Katie Gluck? No, absent. Peter Guerrero?
Yes.
Peter Liddell? Absent. Danielle Madugo?
Yes.
And Paul Moss made the motion. And David Spath? Absent.
So that motion was Danielle made the motion, and who was the second? Paul?
I made the motion.
Paul made the motion.
Lisa seconded, I believe.
Yeah, Danielle wasn't fast enough. She has her hands full.
And more than her hands.
Okay, good. So we have some old business. I just wanted to report that, as people probably noticed from the last board meeting, the board voted unanimously to hire the emergency preparedness coordinator position that we recommended and the grant proposal writer position that we recommended. And so once Bill gets shut of this meeting tonight, and takes a day off, his next magical trick will be to start on that. Of course, we'll help with anything we can. You let us know. Any comments on that?
Well, I just want to acknowledge that this is actually a huge accomplishment of the work of this committee and the work of Kevin kind of pushing these along, and also a bill to support and package them in a way that worked for him and for the board. So I just want to acknowledge that, you know, it's not a huge amount of money considering, you know, where the fire department budget is now. And it's a great opportunity to test out the productivity of these two positions. So kudos to everybody who made this happen.
Thank you. Anything else?
Yeah, thank you for, you know, for putting this forward. And I am eager to move forward with it. I had hoped to bring you a sort of final draft of the postings for, you know, to go out, but it's just been all consuming getting the meeting prep for tonight. So I will definitely follow up as soon as possible on that, and, you know, eager to get going.
Great. I noticed that we have a second participant, not only from a phone number. My first concern is this one of our board members phoning in? If so, is it possible for you to raise your hand, or could you?
I just did allow to talk if they would like to.
Okay.
Well, that might be Dave.
I'm just checking.
Hello, Kevin.
Yeah.
It's Peter Liddell.
Hi, Peter.
I'm just by phone today.
Okay, great. So we brought you on board. And you're in as of 3:10.
Okay, thank you.
Is Katie available, do you know?
I don't think so.
Okay.
She may come in later if she gets back in time, I think.
Oh, okay, all right. Because I talked to her a couple of days ago and she wrote me a couple times today. So all right, good. Glad to have you on board. That's fine. So we'll move you on to the grown-ups table, and we're okay with that. So the second item on old business is the refrigerator magnets project, and I haven't gotten too far along on this ever since. I did check with a Staples store to see what they could do to help us, but they aren't really equipped for this. I'm going to try Copy Central and I know one of the other services just to see. This is all logistics, and it's just a question of how we get this stuff printed and stuffed into envelopes and sent out at hopefully the most efficient cost to the district. But it's, you know, it's just an ongoing project. We would of course like to have it going, and as we get the cost of this, and we don't know what the envelopes and the packing and mail, I sent a kind of a preliminary cost analysis to Bill a couple weeks ago. Our biggest question is what the envelopes and the stuffing, the envelopes and the mailing will cost us. As noted, to put stickers in as Chris Hilliard suggested, which I think, you know, it's a great idea if we can do it. It's going to add a couple hundred dollars onto this, or a few hundred dollars. I can't remember the exact, might be about five. We'll figure if we have 2,500 or 300 households and two stickers each, going to cost like about 30 cents. So you can do the math and figure out what it costs us. I mean, $750 or something. I don't know. We'll figure it out. But we'll get the prices on that and then see. Because we'd like to have the best mailing possible, as long as we're going to do it. Do we have any comments on that guy? Oh, I see Dave Spath is here. Great. Thank you, Dave. Do we have any other comments on that one? Danielle does.
Any question? Once they're purchased, then it's going to require either one of us, or maybe we can get a volunteer group to stuff the envelopes, or how is that going to work?
Well, I'm going to see what these services possibly can do. It's all logistics right now. I'm trying to I've had it on my docket to get hold of the Copy Central people, who are usually very efficient, but I don't always know what they can do. But I'll keep asking. It's And if anybody has any other great ideas, it's fine. I don't, let's see.
Just.
Yeah, Yves. Go ahead.
Yeah, I know that both KPOA and KFC do annual mailings. And we use a service that does all the collation and all the mailing, et cetera, et cetera. So I'll get you those.
Oh, thank you. That'll be good. Yeah, that's I mean, I have a feeling if we're going to be doing, Bill and I were looking at about 3,000 packets because we have about 2,500 households. And we figured one per household, but you know, you always have others around that people can use in the future. So, okay. Anything from the public on this? Okay, hearing none, there's no action. So we'll go ahead on. Last time I talked briefly about the emergency radio program, and I just want to get a sense that I mean, not to belabor this, and I don't want to call it a dead horse because we don't want to beat it because it's an important thing. But I think minimally, since we've done so much work on this, we could assemble a prototype for a web page that when we get the coordinator on board could be mounted on the district website and publicized so that people could at least have examples of different kinds of radios that they could get, what some of the features are and what it would do for them. And then I think if somehow it turned out that we could find demand from the community that, you know, for people that with low incomes to, or whatever, to ask for these things be supplied to them, you know, then we could bring that up to the border. If it's only a few people, we probably have the funding to do that ourselves. But right now it's just difficult to actuate that mechanism. I think that's where we are now, but I'm happy for other suggestions. Okay, good. In my spare time, let me see what I can, I've got a bunch of stuff written on that. Let me see what I can collate and we'll see if it's helpful. And the fourth thing, by the way, I didn't see any public hand up on these things. So I'm just
going to. I'm keeping an eye out.
All right, Chris.
I do see Chris.
He just got it. He says, boom, right there. Chris, go ahead.
Okay, so when we talked about this last summer, I did contact one of the suppliers, and I have sort of pallet and case quantities. So if you do want to place an order, I do have some bulk order information. We might also be able to use the web sale infrastructure through La Miranda CERT.
Yeah.
It's pretty easy to get it set up. And I can talk to them about splitting it off so we have a Kensington-specific front end if we want to brand it. But if we do find that we want to make them available, that may be one web store that's up and running, and we can sort the sales pretty easily.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Do you remember what vendor you talked to?
I don't. I apologize. I can't tell if my microphone is modulating. There's some really bad sound on my end.
Yeah. Well, it's like a teletype going. For anyone who remembers what a teletype is,
I'm unmuted.
I got two people, three people. Okay, that's fine. Good. Yeah, it's okay that we can understand you.
Yeah, so I have to dig it out. But
I don't. Let's see first what the ad looks like, and then if you look at that, and I know I talked to the people who provided the Foss Power or Running Snail one, kind of the medium priced option that did not have the automatic emergency, you know, light siren warning system that the Midway?
It was Midway.
Midland, yeah. Mm-hmm. That they had was that. So you talked to Midland, okay. So let's just see. Let's see what we can do on that. It's if we bought in bulk, we might get a 10% discount. I'm not sure that's a whole lot, you know, to because we don't know how much we'd really want. It's a complicated, you know, we've talked about this before. And, you know, okay. Fine, anything else on that?
Danielle has her hand raised.
Danielle, sorry.
I had a thought on back about the magnets. So when you were done with this, it was just a brief thought.
I think we are. Go ahead.
If we're going to send out an explanation letter along with the magnets, which I thought was the case, we should also include instructions to how to sign up for NCSL and the community warning system for the county.
Thanks. We wrote up a half page thing. We've edited it a lot. Thanks for everyone's comments. And it does end with both the CWS and the NCSL warning.
Did I miss that? Was that sent out to everybody or maybe?
Oh, let's see. I'm trying to think if I think at a meeting or two ago, we might, cause I know I checked the text with some people, probably not everybody. Because I know I was bombarding people for a while and I kind of wanted to pick my spots so that, you know, we wouldn't get reviewer fatigue, as we say. But I can easily send it around. Let me make a note to do that. Send around. Add the text. Okay, I'll do that after meeting. Thank you. Anything else on this? Okay, and then I was going to report. I have talked with Chief Schold and with Officer Harms a few times on the progress with the evacuation procedures, and at the moment they're trying to resolve some other issues that relate to other issues on the force. And so this has kind of had to take a back burner. But they haven't forgotten about this and they want to get back and hopefully have a talk with either us or the full board, maybe next month or the month after about it. And I have put in a request to them to see about evacuation signs on Sunset and Arlington. They like the idea and they're going to look into it. So that's fine. Any questions on that so far? Sorry, there's not much to report.
You know, along with that evacuation procedure, I know Harms has been working with me and the principal at the school towards working towards the evacuation of the school. So I'm interested to hear what the evacuation plan is for the community, because it does relate to the evacuation of the school in my mind in some sense.
Yeah, so, I know. And you're right. And it's not, I know that they're trying to devise kind of a full evacuation plan, but also there's the question of, you know, local parking configuration changes. And as you point out, a lot of this is related, first of all, the first thing everybody tackled was the areas around the school. You know, not just the bollards, but the streets in the areas so that they can be cleared and hopefully make parking configurations more efficient for evacuations should they be required. That's kind of where they are. And I think that right now the whole evacuation plan is, they're also trying to develop that, but you know, it just stands to reason we've got to take the most glaring problems and that are obvious with obvious solutions and try to get them done as soon as possible rather than wait for a full plan. So you know, they've only got so many people. It's really too bad there isn't more to do this. But in our defense, Berkeley doesn't have an evacuation plan either. And they don't know when they're going to get one. Yeah, so, yeah.
Well, I do know that Officer Harms is planning on speaking to the entire faculty about the proposed off-campus evacuation plan, which will hopefully go down this fall. But at least they're making progress on that front. I see it because I'm a part of it. So that's good.
Yep. This has been terrific. Okay. Anything else on old business? Any comments or questions from anyone? Committee or public? Okay. Seeing none, then we can proceed. Now the new business. Oh, apart from Bill, do you want to talk first about the Form 700 compliance? Because
sure.
You looked this up and you've got the beat on it.
Sure. I wasn't aware of it until the last meeting that but we did check, and the emergency prep committee members are by the board's policy, conflict of interest policy, were included as having to submit the Form 700 filings. So it's an annual filing for the prior year. So you're filing now for 2020. You should have received, I passed on your emails, a direct email from Netfile. The easiest way to do it is to do it that way, you know, because you can fill out the forms and you know, submit them, and then you're done. If you want to do it by hand, and that's fine too. But then you can send it to me, and then I'll mail it in. They have to receive a hard copy. Officially, it has to be a wet sealed hard copy. But I think, you know, I'll just send in scan forms if that's the case. The deadline is April 1st, I will note a couple things if you haven't done it before, or if it looks imposing, that it seems as if the financial disclosures kind of apparently include everything. But for example, you don't have to list your own personal interest in your home, let's say. You don't have to list a business. You don't have to list any kind of other assets or things that aren't related to the district's business. So unless you specifically had a business that was doing, doing business with the Kensington Fire Protection District, you wouldn't have to do that. If you list things and it's beyond what's really necessary, that's fine too. But these are public disclosure documents, and anybody can look them up. The easiest way, if on viewing it, if it seems like there's nothing beyond just the title page, the cover page, you just say, you just check the box that says nothing else to file, and you sign it, and you're done. So I'm sorry for the late notice of it, but I'm not familiar with committee members typically being required to do this. It was just added to the, as part of Kensington's requirements in our last conflict of interest update. So, and it currently, that was done last year, and so they have to be done for last year.
I think Peter, do you have your hand up on purpose?
Yes. Okay. Basically, Bill has just answered my questions because this is the first time I'm seeing this. So. My first question was, does it apply to us? And the answer is yes. And the second is, it sounds to me, Bill, like if you have no financial interest involving the district, it's basically, your name and address, and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've collected forms from typically directors of boards where they've listed companies that they've had stocks in, assuming that maybe there's some interaction. As far as I know, even that type of thing is not necessary. So your typical circumstance for most people would just be saying that there's no additional information and signing it.
If I understand, and Bill, correct me if I'm wrong, the reason why the committee is subject to this is that the board decided that they would need to fill in these forms. but legally it looks like we don't really have to do this. And if that's, and I think Dave Spath has pointed this out before, and Lisa may have as well. If that's true, then the board could easily enact a chain of a change in policy that says there's no reason to do this. And then we wouldn't have the hassle every year. But even if the board did this, and I would recommend that, we would still have to fill this out for the 2019 and 2020 years because it's on file. Is that
just 2020? Because just 2020 because the actual conflict of interest policy that was adopted that made this requirement was in 2020.
Okay, so that's anyways. This is more information than you actually need, but I hope the board can act on this. Peter, are you still hands up or?
Yes. You know, generally, I do think it's not a bad requirement. For example, you know, we have discussed in the past a contract with an emergency notification system that could run into the hundreds of thousands of dollars. And I think, you know, Kensington residents have a right to know whether anyone who's recommending such a thing be installed and paid for with their tax dollars, whether those individuals who are advocating it have a financial interest in the company. You know, basically at this point, I see it as a kind of a non-reporting issue for probably most of us, but I think it provides greater transparency and assurance to the community.
Thanks. Lisa?
Yeah, I agree with Peter. I don't think these are a big deal. I filled these out a million times. I'm on other committees with the county where it's also required. And I think in the city of Berkeley, anybody who's on any of the commissions appointed by the board are have to do this. So I don't, it's not a big deal. And it seems to, as far as I know, it's pretty much standard procedure in many of the things that I'm involved with. So I'm, you know, I say, let's just go ahead and do it.
Okay, fine. Yeah, it's, you know, it's, they're actually pretty easy to do. I did mine already. I didn't do any kind of wet signature where they just asked, I just put S and printed my name. And I haven't, you know, no one's got back to me yet. And, you know, this is the time of COVID. So, you know, if they catch me up, they catch me up, but the statements I made are true.
So if you do it online, there is no wet signature. The whole thing is.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
I wouldn't expect them to require a wet signature if you do it the old-fashioned way.
I know there's, you're right, Larry, there are so many stupid, sorry, documents that you know, it's a PDF online, you fill it out online, everything except the signature, then you have to download it, sign it, scan it, and send it back to them. It's like, okay, yeah, like everybody has a scanner in their basement or something. But, you know, okay. Well, anyway, so... point taken. Thank you. Any other comments? Okay, good. So that's it on the 700 thing. Lisa has
Lisa has a question.
I've got one other thing. I looked in all my emails and I don't have anything for this committee from Netfile.
Okay. Thanks, Lisa. I will yeah. Check because. Yeah, they told me that they did send it out yesterday, right after I had sent them the email addresses, but I'll tell them again.
Okay. Yeah. I don't have mine yet. I don't know if others do.
I've received a notice.
Okay. Yesterday, Larry?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't, but I think it's because I already did mine.
I did not.
Okay. This is Peter. I'm just looking at my email. It came from, the sender was Netfile on behalf of Lauren Hull.
That's right.
That's what I got.
That's right. Lauren is the county czar for it, I think.
So does that mean there's no identification of this particular committee?
Yes.
So if I've gotten two, maybe one. I have two, but there's no identification of what committee. I thought it was the other committee since it came
from. Well, and you should be able to fill out one form and list multiple positions if it's within the same
the county. That explains it. Thank you very much.
I'm just going to check my spam folder.
Yeah, and also, I mean, it is automated and such that once you get into the system, they send out automatic updates. If you've already filed, you're not going to get, you know, that's not going to be pushed out to you. So there's those types of things. I've even had a situation where there was an older one that was just a mistake, but it was in the system and couldn't be purged. So,
okay.
Maybe that's wrong.
Thank you. I didn't get one.
You did not, Kev?
No, but as I say, I've already.
If you filed, then that's fine. Then you won't. Yeah, you wouldn't.
Yeah. Okay, good. So let's move it to inbox.
Can I ask Bill a quick question? It's Dave.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, Bill, since I filed already that hard copy, I'm assuming I'm not going to get that Netfile email because I haven't seen it.
Yeah, I will forward them what you sent me. I'm kind of surprised. I might have told them that was the case, in which case you wouldn't have received it. Otherwise, maybe you didn't. Well, you're just consider it filed because I'm going to forward it. And yeah, if you do see something, just ask me about it. But I'm considering it filed. So.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Great. Jeez. Okay. Well, I did find that one message was from the district that went into my spam box, but they usually don't do that. So I'm going to figure that's okay. Alrighty. Great. Then I guess the next thing that I wanted to discuss here that we have on the agenda are actually, I mean, there's two things that are obviously related. There are some things that we can work with. There are some things that, you know, Bill or other people do, and there are some things that you know, we can hope our coordinator, once hired, can get to work on. And so I kind of thought we could just do a little brainstorming, to talk about, just things that would be possibly of use. I can volunteer that we've got. I sent Bill with help from Peter and Paul and Cordis some bump for the next fire plug that talks mainly about the kinds of things that we've been doing in the district. I guess, Larry, you've seen that too, or I ran it past you anyway. I mean, if everybody wants to see it, that's, if you're interested, it's fine. You might get some more ideas. Let me send it around. I hate to, you know, just jam your mailboxes, but this is optional. If you are interested in looking at just the suggested text. I think that for the fire plug, my sense is that if we keep it as local as possible, focus on what we're doing, motivating people to get organized, reminding them of things they need to do to be prepared to, you know, for the fire season, for earthquakes, that's kind of our best use of space. This I'm suggesting instead of kind of boilerplate that comes from other agencies, such as big diagrams on house hardening and vegetation stuff, which we've done in the past. But I would like to suggest that we consider a fairly extensive revamping of the district website, not necessarily format oriented, but there are just some pages and categories on the website that may not be used as well as they can be. I mean, resources, for example, announcements have traditionally been like there's been one a year, and it's been about getting a new fire truck or the district got a distinction, you know, certificate. That's all fine, but the residents, that won't help the residents, you know, in case of they're trying to find information. And so I was thinking that one of the things we would suggest for the coordinator to considered doing, it's up to Bill, is to figure out how to revamp the website so it gets the kind of information to people that they need most quickly. And then we have things like, you know, articles that could be written, and Paul has a piece in the Outlook that just came out today, or at least I got mine today. And it's, I don't know if everybody's seen it yet, but I'm gonna show it because it's cool. And it's this nice, on page two, right on page two. In big yellow letters with a warning sign. Let me try to frame this for you. No, those are ads. Sorry. Yes, there. That's what Paul has given us for public safety reminder in the Outlook, which is great. It's, you know, it's yellow and it's got warning signs on it, and it's all about the new caller ID for the community warning system, the phone number. So. You know, these things are really good, and I'm glad that he's been doing that. You know, we can get stuff in as often as we can try to make it, one hopes.
Be monthly.
And so it's really good of Linnea to do that, especially since we're not having to pay for it, and that's especially good.
Kevin, I'd just like to add that the same article, almost word for word, it's not an article, the post, is going in Nextdoor Kensington too. I wait about a week or two, and then I post it. That's what I did a month and a half ago. And with the first one on Nixle, I put it in Nextdoor.
That's good.
As well.
You put it in under you or under a, because Bill could send it out through the district, if that makes more sense.
If you want. I mean, I just.
It doesn't matter.
I took the text almost, I don't think I changed anything. Well, just put it in there. And I got about 14 or 15 responses. One was from Lisa.
Yay. Okay, well, that's good then. So I'm just interested in you know, the kind of projects and priorities that people might think would be most useful for the district, just, you know, to get us all oriented and on the same page, and, you know, to give Bill as much help so that when the coordinator comes in, we've got a set of things that could be done. I'm hearing crickets, so I guess that's okay. It doesn't much matter.
Well, Kevin, I think it'd be helpful to see whatever you've put together. maybe, you know, that might spur people's other thoughts about what kind of things we need to be informing people about.
Okay, all I have is draft stuff for the fire plug, which I can send around. And I can also send around a few suggestions, mostly about websites and other kinds of publicity things.
I think that'd be a great beginning.
Okay, let me do that. You know, are all of you on the district email list so that, you know, so like you will get a announcement from the district that we have a committee meeting or a board meeting in your email box?
Yes, I am. And I responded back because all of those district emails recently have been going to my Gmail junk, and they weren't before. And I don't know if anything's changed.
Yeah, I saw that, Lisa. And I don't think I can control that particularly. You might need to just select it as a safe sender. But unless somebody can tell me how to make our,
I think you're right. That just happened to me. I saw that you sent out an announcement of the EPC meeting and it went to spam in my folder. So I just wrote, you know, just put not spam, and so it won't be.
So just so you know, I mean, one of the things is that those, our main email account, our generic one, is fire@kensingtonfire.org. My email is specifically, it's a sort of a sub domain, not domain, but sub email of that, bill at or B Hansel, whatever, and just like everybody else has those other prefixes. But I think one of the problems is when you have sort of a generic sounding email like fire at Kensington Fire, that it can start to get tagged as, and especially if there's regular emails that go out from it to, you know, many people on a list, it can get kind of tagged that way by the internet.
Maybe, you know, I guess my hope is here, Bill, that we can get more people in the community to sign up for this by using Nextdoor. If when you have a sec, could you remind people, or if you want, we can write
sure. a
text for you on Nextdoor that if you want to receive notices about, meetings and announcements and important information, please get on the email list and check your spam just to make sure that it hasn't gone there.
Okay. Sure.
Because I'd like to see more people signed up to this. A lot of people aren't that should be. Okay. Peter has his hand up.
Yeah, I wanted to respond to two things. I'll take the most recent issue first. I have the occasion to use Marketing Cloud to distribute materials to several thousand people in an organization I belong to. And sometimes those wind up in what's called promotions. Gmail is it's kind of annoying. You know, I mean, for some people it might be really good, but for people who try to communicate for organizations, it's not so good because Gmail sorts things into three categories, but you can go into your preferences and create your own kind of categories. My advice to anyone who sees things winding up in either a Gmail promotion or in another email provider's spam or junk folder is to go into your preferences, because it cannot be controlled at the generation source. It can only be controlled at the recipient source. And if your email provider is sorting things in a particular way, you can maybe control that by looking at the preferences for that email provider. So that's point one. Point two is to answer Kevin's earlier question. I was one of a couple people who had seen your Fireplug email, and I thought the issues that you raised were good ones for the plug. And just for everyone else's information who hasn't seen it yet, one of the articles would be on the cameras in the canyon, and what the status of that is, and how to access them, and so forth. So that's the kind of article that I think would be really excellent for the Fireplug. And I think, you know, Kevin, your suggestions to kind of redirect that publication towards something that's more useful to the community is should be encouraged and is a great idea.
Right, great. I will send around all that stuff. I think it's close to being usable. So we'll go with that, I guess. Thank you. I've got that on my list to do. Okay, that's fine then. I just want to make sure, where are we here? No, I'm wrong on that. Where did I put this? Oh, I know where it is. Sorry. Lost my agenda for a minute. Okay, well, you know, that's fine, and I will get to work on that stuff. And seeing no questions from other people at the moment, and there's no action on this, so we can move to item five, which is our reports and other items. And Lisa worked up a great summary of a couple of important conversations that she's had with local officials on the paths. And so I think we just turn it over to her, if that's okay.
For no objections. I just wanted to kind of just formally just bring this to this group. you know, I was just really interested in how other communities are dealing with paths and path maintenance and path improvements and focusing on the purpose of evacuation or the option, I should say, for evacuation on foot. And I really, Mill Valley has done the most work in this area that I could find. And I thought it was just a really interesting case study. I spoke to one person who is with the city of Mill Valley in the Public Works Department, who's in charge of improvements to the paths. And I spoke to another person who's at the Southern Marin, what's it called? The
Fire Protection District.
District. So we have a Fire Protection District who deals with the vegetation management, and we have a city that through their recreation division deals with the improvements and kind of the day-to-day maintenance of their path system. Now they have over 350 improved and unimproved paths in Mill Valley. You know, we have maybe 11 here in Kensington. So it's really a pretty extreme, you know, scale change of what happens. But I just wanted to really, we don't have to belabor this. And I think Bill is going to know a lot more having worked and lived in these communities. But this is just a summary that points out kind of two pieces. One is that two different agencies are working together on for the purpose of safety of the community and recreation of the community on the path network. And that's something that I think could be applicable to our town, our little hamlet here in the hills, where we have these two jurisdictions that maybe can help each other and help the community to make this more of a reality. And that's assuming at some point we do get public ownership of these paths. So that's one thing I wanted to point out. And the other thing is, you know, the actual vegetation management of these paths, you know, they are spending $40,000 a year for all of the probably over 100 at least of the 350 paths in Mill Valley, hundreds perhaps, for vegetation management twice a year. That's $20,000 twice a year, which really, you know, when you think of the scale of what they do, it's the cost to do 10 of these in our town would be very minimal in terms of maintenance of vegetation just for fire safety purposes. So I think, you know, the working together and the low cost, at least of the vegetation management piece is something that is just information for this community that we can kind of have at our back pocket and have that as part of the discussion were we to get public ownership and be able to move forward. So it's just, you know, it's not the end of the, it's two telephone calls with two people who are in charge of these areas. It's not scientific. I didn't go into great detail because I don't think it really, the points to be made are not about the detail. It's really more about the collaboration between these two agencies. So I just wanted everybody here to have that and to just think about it if we ever get a chance to move forward.
Thank you. Comments, questions?
Yeah, Lisa, it's Paul. I noticed in your report the huge size of these communities. I mean, with 350 paths, half of which are improved, I just don't see how that translates down to us at this time. And I think the work that's needed is still imminent. I mean, waiting for some kind of coordinator or somebody to put agencies together to get this stuff. I just can't see it happening soon enough. I mean, it's great that they can do it. Mill Valley has a lot of money and so forth. Do you think that there's a way that citizens really, like the path keepers, could continue to maintain the vegetation problem? Because I don't think that requires an awful lot of, I don't mean to be demeaning, but real skill, except with maybe trees. And they've been doing it for a long time. And in the meantime, see if we can allocate some amount of money for path improvement to make them safer. And one that comes to my mind right away is the Willamette Path, which if you look at the map, it really goes a long way down the hill from where it starts at the upper reaches, drops you down about three blocks, straight path. The trouble is I recall, I haven't been over there for since about last fall or winter, but the top of that path really needs improvement. I can see trying to get some money grant-wise or from the KFPD budget to hire people that can actually improve those paths so that they're safe like some of the others. Like, for example, the Beloit path is just great these days. I mean, I don't see how anybody can really complain too much about the accessibility and use of that, except for maybe some of the lower steps, which are railroad ties. But they're not bad, whereas the top of Willamette is just dirt and is going to be a mess. Anyway, I'll stop there. I think you know what I'm after.
Yeah, I think you bring up a lot of good points. Totally and completely. I mean, I think the issue really is there, first of all, the Pathkeepers' mission is for public ownership. The mm-hmm. Kensington Improvement Club does a couple of paths, usually the ones that are most heavily used, a couple times a year, like Ardmore and some of the other ones. They don't necessarily do all of the paths. That's not what they've been doing. So it's really the neighbors who kind of come together mostly and clear some of the paths, and the Kensington Improvement Club clears others. Pathkeepers individually may join in, but that's not our charge. The issue really is for somebody to go in there and make physical improvements. Nobody's willing, nor would I recommend they do that, because there's a huge liability to an individual person. I mean, once you touch it, if it's not built to perhaps a standard or perhaps considers certain kind of criteria, I mean, agencies have more protections and, and there's an umbrella under which volunteers can work. I mean, it's very hard to raise money for land that nobody controls, in a sense, to make those improvements. I think you're right. The community is very willing to fundraise and help do all this work, but until it's owned by somebody that is a public agency, it's very, very tricky to, and personally, you do put yourself at great risk to make those improvements. So I think you're right, we could do it, but if a public agency owns it, it would make it a lot safer for individuals who are doing that.
Sure, but I just can't see that happening fast enough. And that's what worries me. And you probably know that the whole lower section, I would say probably about 50, 60 vertical feet of the lower section of the Beloit path was improved quite a bit. And I assume that was just neighbors doing that. It looks like fairly expensive work too. It's not a trivial job. They did a really nice job. They really leveled it out. Did they just go do that on their own? Do you know? I don't. Yes,
they did. They went did it on their own, or they put together a group to do it. Yes, it was not authorized by anybody, nor did they have control of the land. And God, hope nobody tries, God forbid somebody, felt that it wasn't built correctly for some reason or something.
So would you think if somebody were to use that in the case of an evacuation and tripped and broke a bone, they could sue? And who would they sue? All those neighbors? I mean.
Well, I can tell you that somebody tripped on the Ardmore path. It's very unusual. First of all, it's very unusual for people to sue when people are walking on these paths. But somebody did trip a few years ago on the Ardmore path, which is paved, the paved mm-hmm. path, mm-hmm. and sued the Kensington Improvement Club, the Kensington president of the Improvement Club, the Kensington Police District, the county, the, blah, blah, the utility company, and the neighbors and the adjacent neighbors. So it's not something, doing it in the context of a project protects everybody, in that regard, that's authorized with ownership. So it's, and even if you're not guilty, you still have to defend yourself against a lawsuit. So, it's, that was a big eye opener, I think, in this community. That's number one. Number two is if they're really being used for evacuation, you really may need some bigger equipment and higher skilled people to take care of some of the tree overhangs mm-hmm. that are problematic. Because the Kensing, I mean, I'm out there whenever they have these, and you know, you can only reach as far as your loppers, mm-hmm. you know. So
I think I accepted tree work. I mean, I mentioned that before. That would require some skilled people. And
yes.
Yeah, yeah. I understand that. Right. Just for the record, was that, were those lawsuits in plural, it sounds like? Were they, any of them successful?
It was one lawsuit and it listed like everybody in the moon.
Oh, I see. Okay.
They basically, you know, were asking for the moon, and they did end up settling out of court, and, you know, but everybody had to defend themselves, or, you know, or their insurance company did. And who paid? The Kensington Improvement Club paid the biggest share for being volunteers of the settlement. And then the KPPCSD paid a small amount, and the homeowner paid a small amount. So, you know, it's not nothing.
Yeah, I understand.
So, that's hence the problem of working on, you know, projects that aren't authorized in a sense.
Okay.
I think your point is really well taken, Lisa. And I want to get to, Peter has his hand up, but I want to reinforce that point about the liability and how, first of all, how rare it is. And the chief you talked to mentioned the same thing. And also that, you know, it tends to get spread around, but it's way better if it's, owned by an agency, or at least that's the cognizant person. So let's keep the names of anyone who worked on these paths anonymous, just so we don't get them into any trouble.
There you go.
Peter, you had your hand up, or?
Yes, I do, thank you. A couple things here, and this is for Bill and for whoever will be our new coordinator. Is I think this work that Lisa's done is a good example of how looking at best practices, looking at what other communities are doing in these areas that we are also looking at, is something that should be routinely on our plate so that we don't wind up reinventing the wheel. And I think, you know, yes, Marin's different from us in terms of its size, both in land area and population, but there are things we can learn from other communities that have paths, that have taken ownership of those paths, and that have funded improvements and maintenance of them. So thank you to Lisa. The other thing I wanted to mention is, I agree with Paul. I mean, my first reaction to Lisa's note was, let's think about getting money to improve the paths, not just, you know, to maintain them. But then I stopped myself because for exactly the explanation that Lisa just gave, we have not resolved the legal ownership of these paths. As a result, we have not addressed the legal liability of these paths. And until we do as a community, we really can't invest in improving them. So I have a question for Lisa, is because I know the other our pals on the other board have been listening to the community members who've been wanting to have the community take ownership. What is the status of that now? Are we getting any response from them, or are they just kind of stonewalling us?
Well, thank you for asking. There's two people who are on the KPPCSD who are a subcommittee looking into paths. That's Chris Deppe and Rochelle Sheriswat. And they are now, and Supervisor Joya has been extremely instrumental in trying to move this forward. He's been dealing with this for as long as he's been in office, which is like his whole life practically. And you know, he feels that this is a really important community issue and has been for a long time. So he's offered up $100,000 of a recommendation of county funds that would go to helping establish the ownership issue to move forward on some of the ownership of not all these paths, but like one or two at a time. And where it's at is that Chris Deppe has been asking for some baseline information from the original subdividers that has been provided by the county to the subcommittee. And the subcommittee had subsequent questions that are now back at the county. So Joya has offered to meet with this group with county staff on a regular basis to kind of work through some of the issues to help resolve the public ownership piece of this or at least get to the questions and issues, and so that the district can make a determination on, you know, can they move forward, will they move forward or not. So yes, there has been movement forward, and hopefully these discussions will be fruitful and lead to at least a trial or two paths that we can, as Paul just said, fundraise for, help the district, build, maintain, whatever. So that would be a very good outcome were that to happen.
In terms of selecting those one or two paths, where does emergency evacuation sit in terms of criteria?
That they haven't even gotten to that level of discussion, although emergency evacuation is an important part of it. So I don't know the answer to that.
Lisa, I'd like to ask a question that's going to reveal my legal naivety, but here you go. Is there a way legally to post something that basically indicates these paths are, put it simply, use at your own risk? And so that it's a little harder to sue. I mean, I know that sounds silly, but I see things like that here and there, you know, that you're on your own in this area, not in Kensington, other places for sure. Can we do that? Is that a legal possibility?
I think
that, that could come a lot faster than I think ownership is going to come.
Right. But the question is, who puts up that sign? And by putting up that sign, you're recognizing that they're unsafe and encouraging people to still use them. You know, it's I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a lawyer either. There's some people say it's good to put up those signs. Some people say it's bad to put up those signs because, I haven't found any rules on that. But I can tell you that in Mill Valley, they do have decals that are put on the paths with a downhill arrow and says, you know, for evacuation.
Mm-hmm.
So they're actually actively, you know, using that them as a tool in their toolbox.
Yes,
I cannot answer. I've gotten mixed messages on that, on your exact question, Paul. But that would be up to the agency who takes them over to make a determination.
Yeah, you're right, Lisa. And those things are basically signs that tell you the route or the way to go, without necessarily recommending the path. I've mentioned this before, but I talked before COVID, with people in Corte Madera, the former mayor and the mayor who was formerly police chief, and we went around town and looked at some of the things they do. And paths are something that they're leery of, because they're concerned about the liability. They prefer to say, you know, like downtown this way, or something, rather than evacuation, because once they say that, then they're basically telling people that that's the case here. As far as the paths go, I don't know, but one of the goals that the police department is considering is painting the blue lines along the roads that are evacuation routes, and that may help things. But again, they're still working on the general plan. But yeah, it's a knotty problem. On one level, we wouldn't have a fire department or a fire board at all, you know, if we were going to be concerned about being sued because someone perceived we didn't do our job in a certain way, or that we did our job in a certain way that they didn't like. And, you know, this worries me all the time, because, you know, our mission is clearly stated. We are a special district because of that mission. And if we don't pursue that mission, then we could be held, as being negligible for saying that we're here to protect people. We're not doing anything about it. And that's, I think, if anything, is the most important thing that our committee is doing, because we're actually actively trying to keep residents safe. Okay.
Can I ask one more question that goes off? I'm going to go off on a tangent, but I'm just curious too. So Kevin and Larry, you guys negotiated or dealt with the owner, Scott Pennington, of the Sunset View Cemetery. Has he taken on any liability, responsibility, because of the posting of those two signs on the outside and the the exit signs are, they could be there for any given reason, right? But that's listed now as an evacuee. It's not listed, I'm sorry. It's posted on the gates there, two signs pointing to the center, go in the cemetery. You know, my next blurb in the Outlook is gonna be about that. Did the management of the cemetery, has he by letting us use that, accepted any liability, responsibility? Just curious.
Well, they allow members of the public through their cemetery at all times anyway to visit grave sites and to, you know, participate in funeral and burials. So I imagine that for them, they have an umbrella policy.
Yeah.
I don't even know if they knew the writer, but that's up to them.
Yeah, I would imagine. That's right.
Lisa, you had a question?
Oh, I just wanted to add, just on this liability thing, one thing the district did find out, and Christepi reported this, was that their insurance with the California Insurance Association, or whatever it is,
yeah,
district association insurance, their insurance would not go up if they were to take over these paths. It would not be increased.
That's right.
You know, their deductible would apply like it does to all cases. And surely if there were a lot of lawsuits, which we have no evidence have occurred ever, mm-hmm, really in any community that's been a problem, you know, then their rates would go up just like insurance rates do if you have a lot of claims. But we don't anticipate that. That's not been the experience of other communities. But, you know, it's always out there, right? So, but there would be no increase to insurance. So I think that says a lot about how much liability they would really be taking on.
I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're right. And that's a very good point.
Hey, Lisa had a question. I remember that the presentation that they gave, and they talked about the Ardmore Path lawsuit. And they also briefly mentioned that the path that I live on, which is the Westminster path between Highland and Westminster, they did attempt to get ownership of it at one point. Do you know why there were issues for that?
Well, the board actually took action to take ownership of that path. This was an earlier board in 2020. They took action, 2012. They took action to acquire that path, and with the intent of acquiring all the paths. And then they did some preliminary research, and then they ran into some obstacles that were either real or not real, just in a discussion that they had with the county. And they decided it was too complicated. So it's, you know, they can make it complicated. My view is you can make it complicated or you can make it not complicated. But, you know, this whole issue of, you know, it got into the issue of, well, do the adjacent property owners have rights? And, you know, I mean, these have been historically used for public access and public paths. And that there are protections around that issue. And they're drawn as right of way, just like the streets were. So they're not separate parcels. It's nothing like, so, you know, they took one meeting and they turned that into, this is going to be hard. And then they bailed and nothing ever happened. And now this board is saying, well, we don't, you know, we're not subject to what the previous board action was, but we will look into it. And we're grateful that they are looking into it.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't know if it was like something serious or.
No, I don't think so. Just it was going to be hard.
Good.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I'm totally happy to get my neighbors and on board to be supportive of the ownership to the community. So I know all of them.
Great. Good. Great.
Well, this is great. And yeah. Lisa, thanks again for all the work on this. It's just great to have this in front of us. Anybody else on this? I don't see any hands raised. Yep.
Sorry. I was just going to mention that I sent you all a link, following up on the link that Kevin sent. I was searching around. Mill Valley has a page on their that has a lot of information. And also, I'll check with my CSD in Marinwood, which is Park and Rec and Fire. We have these little, what we call them, coffee paths, that are only 30 yards long or so. They're not very long, but they are paved and they are part of the district and spread throughout the community. And I'll check on the liability issue, because I know when I was on the board, we also have a lot of open space, that, and there was a sort of unofficial fire road that was a dirt road that had a slide into a neighboring property, and the district was sued, and it was a sort of a just a hole in our insurance, which after that was filled, but it wasn't a big deal, you know, to fill it and cover that in the same way that our parks, the more obvious land that we own, was covered. So
great, thank you. Okay, anything else from anybody? I'm not seeing any hands raised. Any other reports that we have on other items that people would like to just summarize? Any progress on things that we haven't done last time?
I'd like to ask Peter if he has any update on the Bollner Peak camera. It's still out. I know you know that, but I don't know why, after you've been working on this for trying to get people to do something. What's the status of that?
Yeah, I just went to the Alert Wildfire site before this meeting to check, because the last I saw from Lafayette was that they were aware of the problem. They were going to be repairing the camera. It looks like, I'm trying to remember what they said had happened. They were doing maintenance on the tower, and the camera was damaged to the point where water infiltrated the camera, and the camera needed to actually be replaced. Why that is taking as long as it is, I don't know. We can send another note to the fellow over at the Lafayette Police Department who is the who's honchoing this. I know that they're aware of it. I know they know what the cause of the problem was. I know they know what needs to be done to fix it. It's not been fixed yet.
No, I know. I looked too. I saw it yesterday, this morning.
But also the good news, I think, is that Paul and Chris, I believe, and others are working on getting additional camera locations. And some of those locations look promising. So, right now we have one camera monitoring Wildcat Canyon. And hopefully by fire season, we'll be able to say we have, you know, at least two and probably three or four.
Wow.
It's Chris and Cordis that are working on it, actually. They're together now.
That's right. I'm sorry. Cordis had suggested some locations, and both Chris and Cordis have been exploring those locations. I think the last I saw from court, it appeared promising for at least one of them.
Okay, terrific. Wonderful.
So I am sending a note right now to find out the status of the Bollner Peak camera that's still out. I don't want to bug these guys too much.
No, I know you're really walking the fine line there, and it's good. Because these are they're just so desperately important. And I think everybody really appreciates it. Anybody else with a quick report on new developments?
I have a question.
Yeah, Bill.
Did anyone listen to the, I had wanted to check this out, the Oakland Fire Safe Council's response drill yesterday? It was at noon. Nope.
I had two other conflicts.
Yeah, I had wanted to listen in, and I missed it, so I was just curious. The other one is,
how was that publicized? I wasn't even aware of it.
You know, being someone who's obviously new, I had some things forwarded about the Oakland Fire Safe Council. I just subscribed to the email list, and that's how I heard about it.
Yeah, that's the best way. And they have a lot of cool stuff, and they're linked into so many great places. That's going to be a great source, along with Marin Fire Safe and a couple of local ones, for the coordinator. Just to get back to our other item, once we start revising the website a bit, we don't have to generate a lot of text. We can easily link to things that are out there that are very readily available and useful for us. I didn't go to, I was at a different, I was at a Myers-Nave webinar on social media. which was pretty much next to worthless. I thought it was, I mean, I'd been on one of them before and they'd said mostly the same things they said before that, and they just never got down to particulars. And when I asked them particulars, they didn't even answer the question. So I was not impressed. So I'm going to ask to be reimbursed for the seminar just because it's a waste of time. Okay.
The other item I had wasn't, I'm trying to couch this in terms of a report, so it's in the agenda, but I did want to mention, obviously, we've got the public safety meeting in a couple hours, and I guess I will report to say that I hope you all attend that, and that we, the managers and former manager Bill Lindsay, the chiefs, have put together this presentation, and it was a little bit tricky because we were basing our ideas about how to present things on how prior meetings have gone, and we haven't seen a meeting between both agencies. It's a lot to sort of wrangle. It will officially be two board meetings happening simultaneously, but they will be officially sort of separate meetings. And the thing that I wanted to point out to keep in mind is that the material was put together in such a way to try to describe the status of where we are. It's a little bit of the history. We don't really want to spend too much time kind of getting obsessed with that. We are where we are, but we wanted to reference not just that this has been something in the last few years of a topic, but it goes back to the 90s and even a little bit earlier that in the 80s, about concerns about the building safety, the buildings, size of the facilities, et cetera, a bunch of those issues. Then it moves into the needs. And the thing that I hope if you're watching, you'll keep in mind and maybe comment on is that the needs list, which is sort of the flower that has to fit into the sack, the needs is based upon the mission. And, there's we hope there will be spirited discussion about what is needed versus what is not needed. But at the end of the day, the emphasis of this discussion is going to be, from our standpoint, is to try to emphasize how the needs are related directly to the quality of what you expect to get from the agency. So obviously your needs can be reduced if you don't have very high expectations. And then there's the next portion would be the sort of constraints and variables. That's the sack that the flower has to fit into. And, again, some debatable areas in there. And then we try to, we do make time for public comments and questions. Questions will not be a back and forth thing. It will be more of just questions put out there and then answered. And then the bulk of the time, hopefully, will be the board sort of discussion debate about where to go from here. So I just wanted to, again, I don't want to get a discussion about it because it's outside of this, but as a report of what is about to happen, and I hope you will be active participants in this meeting, since you are all knowledgeable about both the, the needs and to a degree what the sort of constraints and the variables are, but more importantly, you are the voice for talking about the quality of service that you expect from the district.
Thanks a lot, Bill. Peter and Danielle have their hands up, but I want to ask that questions be limited to format of the meeting, which is what Bill's saying, so that we don't stray off the agenda. Having said that, Peter, go ahead.
Mine is more informational. I read the Outlook article and I see that, the options that were laid out for the police department there by Marty, I think. And it talks about, building a new structure or renting a leasing space. When I walked by the tennis courts in the, that area recently, there's a building that's not in use that's sitting there. Has that ever been considered for renovation and to turn that into the police department?
That's the annex that they talked to about at the end of the article.
Oh, okay.
Okay, good. Danielle?
Mine was procedural, which was, so are public questions and comments limited to 3 minutes?
Yes. Actually, I think they might even be limited to 2 minutes. There's a specific comment period within the course prior to the board discussion. And I think that was going to be limited to 2 minutes. And then there's another one at the end of the meeting, just of which would be like the normal general comments. Although in a special meeting, you can only comment about the material of the meeting. So, but anyway, they will be limited. And like I said, the goal is to not get into question, answer, and then counter question and counter answer to more kind of collect the questions, because we just envision that there's so much material here and it's such an important set of things to cover. We really wanted to focus more on the needs and the constraints rather than the discussion on, okay, well now here's all the options. That's for the board to go and for to board to consider what the public comments are or questions.
Yeah, and it's really, I think the great thing about this is there's a whole lot of information here. It's been very well researched, and I'm very happy personally that the GMs are going to stay focused on this report and not have to get into other ancillary issues of history and obvious other things. Peter, do you still have your hand up? Did you have something else to ask?
No, I'm done. Thank you.
Okay, great. I don't see any other comments or questions from anyone. And so having said that, if there's any other any other business, do we miss any other reports or anything?
I don't think so.
Okay, seeing none, then I think, we'll...
Kevin?
Paul, yeah.
Were you looking for suggestions on future topics still? That's on the agenda.
Yes, that's I was just about to.
I'm sorry.
Get to that, but that's good because, often we just tell people, send in anything as they occur to you. And I've got some things there for the next meeting, thanks to your help. Please go ahead.
Well, I was mentioning, I would really like to know what the current status of Karu's involvement with us is. And also, it'd be nice to hear something about the sirens again, since people like Katie and yourself put so much time into that. It seems to have just sort of
yes.
Aside.
Thank you. Just everything else has been happening and we've gotten this done and we both have assembled information, but we have to get our heads together on what we have with respect to the emergency warning systems options. And I don't know about Caro Echo. I think we've talked about this with Hal Lair, and I'd like to see something that's sort of a focused thing, rather than just a long presentation about what they are and what they do and how long they've been here. And I want to see if there is something that the group wants to come to the committee or to the board about with an issue or a problem or a suggestion. That's what I'd like to see, but I think I haven't yet seen something that focused. But obviously we would really welcome it as soon as that happens. I'm not sure, I know, Larry, we talked with Hal. Did you get the sense that there was a focus kind of question or proposal that their group had?
He didn't talk about that, but there is a lot of material that they, there is a specific proposal that they're generating. It's just we didn't talk about that in our meeting with Bill. The meeting with Bill was much more historical.
Right.
Where Echo came from.
So maybe you and I could talk to Hal another time and see what he's got in mind.
I think that's a good idea.
Great. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, I was just trying to see if they could give a presentation. Short presentation, however they want to do it, so that we know how they would fit into our comms plan, communication plan.
Yep.
I mean, exactly where will they be posted? How will they decide the whole thing? I didn't want a background thing at all, just how they will fit into communication plan, because they can fill the role that we can't with handheld radios or anything like that.
Yes.
And that could be really important if push comes to shove, you know.
Yep. Okay, good. Yeah, that was not yet part of our discussion, but I think the focus you present is right on. Okay. Any other agenda items for future meetings? Then with permission, I will adjourn the meeting with thanks at 4:29. We are at least half an hour short of our usual peregrinations, which is just fine. I think having Bill on board is making our meeting shorter, which is a real blessing. And we'll look for the same efficiency tonight, Bill. Thanks to everybody. And
no pressure, Bill.
Right, exactly.
No pressure. Yeah. And we'll see you tonight.
I'm actually, if I will be running the controls for the meeting, so I'm very nervous. With 10 directors and 2 managers and 2 fire chiefs and an interim manager, and then a lot of people with a question. So be patient.
It'll be fine. We'll make out. Don't worry about it. It's, there's no rush. This is not rocket science. And, and the people calling in are going to have, quite often it's enough trouble to get them to, unmute and everything else. It'll be okay. You'll be fine.
Is there a limit to how many people can join the meeting?
I just increased our account. So we'll see. I mean, we can have up to 500 now. So I'm hoping it's not going to be that many. But.
I'm hoping it is 500, because I think we have to start reaching the rest of the community. We keep having the same 20 or 30 people show up, and not surprisingly, we keep getting the same 20 or 30 opinions, but we're not hearing what the entire community is thinking about.
In Kensington, Larry, you get 20 or 30 opinions from the same 8 people.
which reminds me of a question I've had for a long time, is why can't the people who are in the community see who's also online with them? Who else is in this meeting? It's like, it's a community meeting without knowing who's the community, who's even there.
Yeah, so, we have to have that chat function enabled. This is a problem. So you can see the participants.
I mean, you don't have to even see them so much. It's even just be able to see their names.
I'm sorry. You can see their names and you can see,
I haven't been able to figure that. I did click the, you will be able to see the participant count.
Okay.
But anyway.
Yeah, that's great. That helps. Okay. Right. Let's give Bill time to prepare. And thanks so much, everybody, for coming. And we'll see you tonight in two hours and a half. A
couple hours, Bill.
Good luck, Bill.
Okay. Rock on.
All right, bye.
Good luck, Bill. Bye-bye.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot.
See you tonight.
Yeah.